Stop hashtagging that gym selfie because it's time for Grain of Truth. Please welcome our host, David Innes!
Hello and welcome to Grain of Truth, the show where the truth has had too many carbs. Your grains of truth today. People who worship foreheads meet at the temple. A flounder is a fish that is easily confused. In New Zealand, when it's raining cats and dogs, the locals say it's pussing down.
Oh.
I see the shaking head. The shaking head of judgment on my left there. And bodybuilders love mathematics because they get to show they're working out.
Very nice.
To introduce our panelists for this episode, it's over to our resident scorekeepers, the Boffins.
Thank you very much, David. From Monash University, Clayton Campus, representing video games, it's Ben Timms. From the Victorian College of the Arts, representing Shakespeare, it's Jenny Lovell. And from the University of Melbourne, representing literature, it's Tim Redmond. And finally, last but definitely not least, from Toi Whakaawi, New Zealand Drama School, representing farming, it's Daniel Pengelly.
The rules of Grain of Truth are simple. Points are awarded to the panelists for their responses to ridiculously absurd questions, scenarios, and topics. Whoever has the most points wins the coveted Grain of Truth prize, which this week is getting some ripped abs.
Ooh.
Sorry, I should clarify. That's getting a torn-up anti-lock braking system. And now before we begin the quiz... Sorry, we're a bit low on the Grain of Truth prize budget this week. Now, before we begin the quiz, here's a small challenge for everybody. Can you name the grain of truth that connects all four of our panelists' topics? That's video games, Shakespeare, literature, and farming. And we'll get back to the answer at the end of the episode, but I will give you a clue. France. France is our clue today. But we'll start with round one, which is called Right Said Ted. Each panelist must deliver a 90-second TED-style presentation relating to a theme. At 60 seconds, they'll hear this noise. And at the 90-second mark, they'll hear this noise. At which they must go and, you know, stop, please. Whoever uses their special skills to present on the theme the best gets the points. The theme of this TED presentation is healthy competition. So we'll start with Ben Timms representing video games on healthy competition. Ben, your time starts now.
Oh, thank you, David. So our topic today here is healthy competition, and being the panel's resident video game specialist, I've basically had this handed to me on a silver platter. I mean, I even wrote half of this whilst playing Mario Kart with my housemate to decide who does the dishes. I wrote the other half after finishing the dishes. See, that's the thing with video games. It's a lot easier to put people on a level playing field with real-world sports who end up having bigger or faster players running through the smaller ones like a spider being hit with a newspaper. But with games, you can just pop in the game cartridge, slap on a handicap, and be done with it. Now, games also have the added effect of being surprisingly good motivators. Varying scoreboards to tally oneself against other players' progress, the almighty achievement log to see if you've slain more dragons than your mother, or crushed the most candy out of anyone in your erotic book club. Or, goodness me, you can even compete against each other to reduce each other's health bars. So if that's not healthy competition, I don't know what is. But of course, if you want to talk healthy, I mean, you can get all paleo on us, and it doesn't really get much more paleo than ancient dinosaurs and gorillas slinging bananas and mushrooms around each other on a dirt track now, does it? But of course, overusage can lead to problematic behaviours such as extreme antisocial behaviour, poop socking, which I'm not going to explain, and even violent behaviours. My brother used to get quite frustrated with his gaming, so we consequently had a lot of damaged equipment and household items. I swear we ended up with 6 torn-up manuals, 5 red rings of death, 4 holes in the wall, 3 smash controllers, 2 headbutter Game Boys, and a cartridge in a pear tree. So there you have it. Video games can be a great source of healthy competition, but one needs to keep it in moderation. Thank you.
There's a question for a panel, but I'll start with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in your past, in your childhood, was there particular video games or even board games or any sort of games, could be parlor, if you will, that were important in your childhood or in your family?
I guess... I didn't have... Oh, this is going to sound really serious. I'm sorry. I didn't have really much to connect with my dad's side of the family, but video games was sort of a thing that we could all play together and actually have that connection with that side of the family. So I guess more just generally video games help bring us together more than a specific thing.
That's really lovely.
Yeah.
How about you, Jenny? Did you have any video or board or
I have to go board game here, David, with my ancient age. The video game revolution has passed me by.
You didn't go down to the diner and
I didn't go down
to go play Pac-Man.
But Monopoly has taught me many things, particularly the notion of avarice. And I must say, going to London, I was particularly disappointed with Pall Mall, having spent so much time trying to put houses on it myself and hotels that I now cannot afford to stay in when I go there. So, yes, I would say Monopoly is the one thing that taught me most.
What about you, Tim?
I had a Dick Smith VZ200, so I used to write my own games and then whip my mates at them because I knew the code of how the games worked. So video games, you could say, taught me the value of cheating.
So often the way. How about you, Daniel?
No, we didn't really have video games. We just had to go out into the paddocks and we didn't have Grand Theft Auto. We just got paddock cars and smashed them into each other.
Fair enough.
But we didn't have any prostitutes to hit after we'd finished doing it. So
that was probably for the best.
I think so.
Lovely. Well, moving on, we have Jenny Lovell, who on the topic of healthy competition, representing Shakespeare. So, Jenny, your time begins now.
Picture this. Elizabethan England, the south bank of the Thames, the liberty of the clink. The only place in London where gambling, prostitution, drinking and debauchery were legal. And in the midst of this, four theatres are also competing for attention. The Curtain, the Rose, the Bear and the Globe. Before Hamlet takes the stage, there are ladies selling oranges, both the fruit and the sexual favour. Cockfights and bear baiting. Then you walk out to speak. And if they don't like it, no polite sleeping like they do in the MTC. No, it's a rotten tomato booing or talk back from the audience. It was like trying to act in the middle of a combination of Crown Casino, the post-Logies drinks party, the Moscow Circus, and all St. Kilda's ladies of the night plying their trade. And yet, amidst this emerges a man who lifts the English language to a height that is yet to be reached by anyone else. How did he do this? He invented words, at least 5,000 of them, and made the punning an art form. All of this makes the audience go, huh? And have to come back and hear the play again in order to understand it. And he didn't just stick to one theme, oh no. He took all the themes his fellow writers were exploring and did a play to counter every one of them. He baked people in pies. He had fairies and witches. Gods descended to bless weddings and bring people back from the dead. And in the middle of the tragedy, he was smart enough to put in a bit of stand-up comedy. But not only in his time did he set up to win the competition, he was a genius at going into the future. He kept a low profile and became an enigma, thus creating generations of study for writers, scholars, and people with nothing better to do with their time, and had a particularly ugly engraving of himself done that has allowed Britain a tourism industry and given card makers a wealth of material. Nobody buys a Marlowe card with a clown nose on it. I will now put down my two be or not to be pencil in the firm belief that Will Shakespeare was a master of healthy competition.
I would argue that our panel here have all had experiences in dabbling in the theatre at some point, but I must ask, do you find that actors and of that regard are competitive people, Jenny?
Oh, no, David, not at all. No, not at all. You sit in you go along to an audition and you wish everybody else in the room there well. And that's on the outside. On the inside, you have an entire interior monologue going on like, oh, she's thinner than me, she looks right for the part. Damn, my hair's dyed, she's got grey hair, she'll get the granny role, I won't. All sorts of fantastic things like that go on. No, it's healthy competition, always, David, because it's done with a smile.
Have you had that experience, Tim, at all?
Ah, yeah, you walk into audition rooms, hey, look, there's three other versions of myself, only smarter and more handsome.
So auditions just generate low self-esteem? Is that
absolutely. Right? And you use that pain to do the comedic monologue about spray and wipe and you get the gig.
Fantastic. Well, our next speaker is Tim Redmond, representing literature, to represent on the theme of healthy competition. Tim, your time starts then.
Thank you, David. A literary quote from Norman Mailer. Identity is not something given to you, but something you gain, and you gain it by winning small battles with honour. But what is honour? Honor is saying, I'm going to do this, and then you go and do it. I introduce to you, ladies and gentlemen, Robert Craig Knievel, or as he was known in the 1970s, Evil Knievel, the man who made a living out of saying, I'm going to do this, and then he went ahead and did it. He said, I'm going to jump Snake Canyon with my jet sky cycle, only to have the chutes open on launch, and he crashed to the bottom in flames. He was the man who said, I'm going to jump 13 double-decker buses in Wembley Stadium, and successfully jumped 12 of those. This is what the man understood, though, that we can all learn from Evel Knievel, because there are many things you can compete against to find yourself. You can compete against nature. You can be Ahab and seek the white whale. You can compete against another man and bite off Evander Holyfield's ear. You can compete against the page like Hemingway famously did, and it ended up with him putting double barrels in his mouth and pulling the trigger. Seduction is competition. Everything is competition, and we need it to find ourselves. What Evel Knievel competed against, and what he knew, is if you're going to compete, make it big. He competed against gravity. Because he knew it's not winning that counts. It's not winning that makes competition competition. It's not the crashing that matters. It's the leaping. So take it home. Invoke the little Evel Knievel in you. Anything in your life, any problem, be it a domestic, a relationship, or your pot plant's dying, turn it into a little competition and hear little Evel's voice in you and say, I reckon I can jump that.
No, that's
I've got a head up.
That's perfectly fine. I'm not going to penalise you much. Now, I just want to know if the panel have ever had to enter into a competition of some kind. So, for example, I went into a writing competition when I was at university. It was a playwright competition, first playwright competition, and there were the top three entrants, and the other two got the prize, and not me. But I'm not bitter at all. Monash Student Theatre. Anyway, I just want to know, Tim, have you ever been involved in any sort of competition, be it sports, academia, writing, or anything like that?
Look, consistently, I have a character quirk where I do actually turn everything into some sort of a competition. Mm. It's hard as a writer, you say that, but it's showbiz, you know, that weird thing if you create a piece of... pour yourself into a piece of art or something you're trying to say with meaning, but the once it's on the page, it's a commodity. Mm. And that, I wrestle with that flip. At once it's going to be, only one of these is going to get produced. So yeah, I've been through that process. It's important, but I'd rather just be successful without effort.
I think that's the case. How about you, Daniel? Have you been involved in any competitions or had to be involved in a competitive process?
Yeah, I think so, once or twice. I was actually last weekend, unbeknownst to me, I was invited to a wedding and it was bring a plate. And I was asked to make a wedding cake. And I was like, okay, well, I will make the wedding cake for you. But they asked three others to make wedding cakes as well. Ooh. And there was 200 people coming. And I arrived with my two-tier cake to find a four-tier cake. Oh. And I lost.
That's a reality TV show.
Yeah. It was harsh. And I learnt really fast to make the biggest cakes that I possibly can ever.
To out-cake each
other. If you make it, I'll jump on a motorbike.
Deal.
Fantastic. Our final speaker is Daniel Pengelly, representing Farming, to present on the theme of healthy competition. Daniel, your time starts now.
Oh, thank you. so I believe healthy competition actually started with the agricultural revolution. If you look back in the annals of history, before we started sort of domesticating animals, nobody competed at all for anything. There was just sort of a plethora of options and people sort of just all shared, and it was lovely. and then one day there was just a really beautiful cow, and some humans wanted it. So they started competing to get it, to come to them. So they started sort of, you know, planting some nice seeds, some nice sort of shrubs and things to sort of encourage them in, and thus domesticating animals. And sort of once we've done that, we've started sort of just sort of symbiotically, just sort of working together to sort of compete. And now we've sort of returned that friendship by sort of breeding them up for meat and then just slaughtering them by the thousands. which I sort of think, how else is that sort of healthy competition? Because we slaughter thousands, but we leave the best 20 to keep to sort of breed on the next thousand. So, you know, that's sort of, I like to think that there's this beautiful sort of farming relationship that we sort of keep going. And although they have lost the ability to sort of compete with us and choose which owner they want, you know, sometimes I like to think, oh, one puppy might have that choice when it sort of bites your hand and goes, I've claimed you as yours. And you go, oh, that puppy out of that litter, you've just beaten the rest. I'll sort of leave those, maybe put a couple of them down. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Daniel, are you from... you're not from City Christchurch, you're at rural...
No, absolutely, North Canterbury.
Forgive my ignorance, is that rural news?
Absolutely, small village. We have a petrol station that's also the post shop. we have a pub that's also the takeaway shop. And we have a ferry shop, which I've never been in.
Right.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. I'm just curious to know, in the panel, are we city people or country people? Oh, where were we born? Tim, where were you...
Born in the country, but I'm suburbs.
suburbs?
Neither.
Neither. Pleasant suburbs.
Yes.
How middle class. how about you, Jenny? Are you city or country girl?
I'm actually beach girl. I was Northern Beach and Northern Beaches.
Oh. That sounds like
girl.
An ABC TV series.
Yes, I find that. Home and away. So, Northern Beaches, Sydney, but I spent most of my school holidays in the country.
Okay.
Horse riding. From the time I was 8 to 18, I was a bit of a horsey girl. Mm. So I would spend a lot of time riding. So I enjoyed the rural
part. I could sense that about you.
Yeah.
How about you, Ben? Are you a...
Well, I mean, I was sort of brought up in sort of eastern suburbs, but about every 6 months we also used to go out to grandparents' property, sort of out 3 hours east, out in Bairnsdale sort of way. So I've got a bit of that mix of the country upbringing, or at least the experience with it, that means that I actually know what a cow is and what it's actually like, which is surprising. Once I got to uni, there were a number of people that were like, well, it's cow, that's where beef comes from. It's just like, well, yes, but what is it like? It's like, I was like, how do you miss what a cow is? It moos and craps everywhere. Like, that's what a cow is.
I like the idea that there's other expectations to what a cow might be, that they arrive to the country and they're all in smoking jackets on chairs. Moo, gentlemen, moo.
Moo, I say.
Sounds about right.
I was born in Gippsland myself. I was born just outside Traralgon, a place called... place called Hayfield, which is 20 minutes outside Traralgon. The accent dialect from where our town is one of those, the ultra end-of-sentence high-pitched ones. And, for instance, the word and that has an N in there, so it becomes annat, which is one of those things. And for some reason, all cows need to be described by their noise, so they're moo cows everywhere, as opposed to all those meow cows everywhere.
I don't think they're real farmers if they're doing that.
Oh, I can probably not.
Really
no.
To that.
Is that the true farmer test?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Excellent. Well, that's the end of the first round, so it's over to a score update from the Boffins. Boffins!
Thank you very much, David. According to the Grain of Truth 64 game, Ben Timms is in the lead by collecting all the red coins and stun-locking player 2 down a pit!
The next round is the analysis and application round. Our panel is divided into teams of two and must apply their skills to an application task. Jenny and Ben, I'll be giving you some established facts, and you have to tell me why I'm wrong about them.
Yes.
Okay, so the first established fact that we've got here is that atoms make up everything in the universe. Why am I wrong?
Well, you're wrong.
Well,
good start. Because they're not actually atoms that make up all the matter in the universe. They're actually tiny little people called Adam. So you're basically just mishearing it. It's just atoms make up the universe, which is also where they got the name of the purported first person the Bible, that Adam was the first, because it's sort of the first that sort of made up everything as time went on, because everything in the universe is made up of atoms.
Absolutely.
Very good.
I agree with my partner.
Excellent. Super.
Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying all of those. And the statement here, which seemed I was always led to believe was true, but vegetables are good for you.
No, you're wrong. completely wrong there. When has just eating vegetables made you feel good? Without any kind of addition of sugar or any kind of sugary substance. No, the notion of combining things that are non-vegetable in origin or have been processed so far from their original vegetation is actually what makes us feel good about ourselves. When you were depressed, when did you go and eat a carrot?
I know when I'm sad. I don't go for a bucket of steamed vegetables.
No,
I go for a bucket of...
chicken or something
or
like
chips.
That.
Deep, or chips. Anything yes. deep fried is going to make you feel really yes. good and good about yourself. So therefore, as we all know, that having that kind of great feeling of goodness in yourself
exactly.
promotes your
yeah.
own
you gotta start
constant,
from the inside.
Ongoing. We do have to start from the inside. That is what tricks your whole metabolism into feeling much better about yourself. Not a vegetable, but certainly a chocolate or a fried food. That is going to make you feel good on the inside, which is then going to make your brain say, hey, nothing matters. I've got this yeah. right here in front of me now. Yep. I can consume it.
Thank you very much for clarifying. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben and Jenny!
Jeez, I could go a dim sim right about now.
Here's a bucket.
Here's a bucket. Don't you feel, don't you feel good?
Put a curtain over me. I'll be very happy.
All right.
You've been there, Dave, right?
Look, we all have. Nothing says I've given up on life than a bucket of dim sims and a load of soy sauce. Now, Tim and Daniel, I'll be challenging you to be playing an obscure board game we've not seen in shops before. So I want you to play it for us right here and now. So there are all the pieces in front of you there.
Yes.
You'll need to look through the rule book. You may take turns and hopefully one of you will win the game.
Righto.
The game that we've got here is called Admin the Board Game.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
I've played it.
All right, let me just unfold the 19-tier board here. There's 17 separate pieces. We need to play a separate game to decide who gets what piece.
Great. I'd like to be the pencil. Do you want to be the abacus?
Oh, little problem with the pencil there. You haven't filled out your application to be the pencil piece form.
Let's go back two spaces.
Oh, you've landed on pay additional tax for unknown reason. You'll need to fill out a reason form so I know why you're paying me tax.
But you actually find I get to move forward three paces because I paid that tax in advance.
Oh, and thus you win the game, which takes us to the next board.
Fabulous. Well, the next one I've got here is the game, the Fringe Festival game.
Oh. Here's your three playing cards, self-indulgence, and two others with self-indulgence.
Right.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to put this onto the board of mixed ability. Would you like to start on the square of hopeful university postgrad?
And here's my artwork, me in front of a roller door because I hadn't written the show yet.
That wins the game of original concept.
Oh, I've got my own festival.
Ah, but you forgot to play the puppetry wildcard.
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel and Tim.
We were describing your show, Dave.
Yeah, you're right. There was no puppetry whatsoever. But everything else was totally out. Excellent. Well, that's the end of the round, so it's over to the Boffins for a score update. Boffins!
Thank you very much, David. According to the Grain of Truth Fish and Chip Shop, Jenny Lovell is in the lead by a deep-fried Mars bar and a bottle of Coke!
Doesn't that make you feel good?
Yes, I'm feeling very good now.
And now everyone's favourite round is coming up next. Our next round is called How Delightful! My favourite game show moment to this entire show. Each pair of panellists, I shall give you a bell, each
ooh.
For dinging purposes.
We just ooh at the same pitch.
resonant oohs we've ooh. Got here. Each pair of panellists are assigned a topic and must say as many delightful things about that topic in 60 seconds as possible. If the other team decree that what has just been said is not delightful, they can make a noise like this, or I can make a noise like this, and I can pass it on to the other team who get the remaining time. So... Yeah, I know, I heard that too. I've gone, how pompous.
You rolled your R's.
I did roll my R's. Oh,
that's delicious.
Oh, I'm so glad that rolling my R's is delicious. Now, Ben and Jenny will be first.
Oh.
And what was that? Oh, okay. All I heard was, hop, 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 hop. But I'm sure that's exactly what was said. Ben and Jenny, you are first. Ben and Jenny, you are first.
How delightful.
And you're...
Just saying Ben and Jenny
how
sounds
delightful.
Funny.
I know, it's delightful. In fact, I'm giving them a point already.
Yeah!
I'd like to thank my mother.
Yes.
There we go.
But not my dad.
How middle class.
Ben and Jenny, you have to say as many delightful things about exercise as possible. So Ben and Jenny saying as many delightful things about exercise starting now.
It produces endorphins, which make you feel really good.
Sorry, I've got to stop you there. At no part do you produce dolphins when you exercise.
I do. Oh. You're not inside my brain. You don't know what's going on.
That's very
it's
true.
It's delightful.
That's very true. I shall give it back to you. I don't know what's inside you, Jenny. I shall assume there's dolphins.
You never shall.
Continuing on, Ben and Jenny.
You can meet new people and go out to coffee with them afterwards.
And you can frolic around the water with your endorphins and get all your exercise through them, riding your endorphins.
You burn enough calories to justify the cake you will eat straight afterwards.
You can get out and see more places, go for walks and see basic things that you can't see from the car.
Exercise is nice!
Yeah, just
I'm sorry, but I think we all know that exercise is just not nice at all. For another 34.5-something seconds, continuing on, Tim and Daniel about exercise. Delightful things.
A well-exercised neck looks terrific with a bow tie around it.
Oh. There are too many bull-necked bouncers around that look incredibly ugly.
That's true. We have gone with the bull-necked bouncer dispute. We shall move it back over to Ben and Jenny, continuing on.
If you're that way inclined, exercising can be a social experience. For those who are extroverted, Jim... Oh.
If you socialise with others, they see you sweating.
Oh, that's okay. Very true. That's very true. We don't want to see our friends sweating. Moving back over to Tim and Daniel about exercise.
I love watching people who are in shape in spandex exercising. That is just the most delightful
thing. That's at least three delightful things.
I have to challenge that.
Oh, why?
Since when has spandex around men's genitalia been delightful?
I'm giving you two more delightful things.
When those gentlemen are... No!
It's okay, it'll be over.
We're continuing on with Tim and Daniel.
It's okay.
We are?
Yes, continue on.
We're just going to say men's genitalia spandex. Men's genitalia spandex.
Oh, you're forgetting the bottom on the back half of the genitalia.
And that's the end of time! Round of applause!
I challenge, appealing to the moderator's sensibility.
You created the spandex car, Jenny, but we played it.
And Jenny, you're the one who brought up an orange as a sexual thing that could happen? I'm still confused.
What?
I'll explain later. I'll sell you an orange.
Oh, right.
Run, Daniel.
Well, on one delightful thing is... actually, no, I've miscounted. I'm so sorry. I've ruined the game. There we go. That's much better. On 10 delightful things was Ben and Jenny, and on 9 delightful things was Tim and Daniel. Ooh. So, yes, very close game. We'll continue now with Tim and Daniel. You now need to start with diets. You need to tell me as many delightful things about diets, starting now.
Your food is really tiny, so you feel like a powerful giant.
Once I've been dieting and I step onto the scales and I see that it's half a kg lower, I just get filled with smiles and chuckles.
You can walk around with a sense of entitlement and smugness at all those people that aren't doing your diet.
I don't think that's very delightful. Smugness is nice for one, but not for everyone else around you.
That's true.
Good point.
He's used the perspective card there. Very good. Ben and Jenny continuing on talking about delightful things about diets.
Delightful things about diets is that going on very many of them gives you an opportunity to have conversation in awkward social situations.
I don't think using multiple diets is delightful. It's sort of depressing.
Using multiple diets means that you have always a chance of success.
Very good. I continue on with Ben and Jenny.
One's bets, yes.
Let's continue on with Ben and Jenny.
Well, I mean, a diet is just generally your food intake, so eating. Eating is delightful.
It is indeed.
Oh, here we go.
As previously established in this podcast, competition is healthy. You can compete against yourself. Today I'm going to eat one less carrot and give yourself a medal. How delightful it is to get yourself a medal that you've made.
It is not delightful to eat a carrot, as I established.
We've been through this.
I'm sorry that your references to the previous part of the podcast have cancelled out each other, causing a dilation in time. With only 5 seconds to go now, continuing well with Tim and Daniel.
I like eating food.
it
may be delightful for you, but not for others that don't have any food.
I'm sorry, we've used the guilt trip card here. That's at least worth 2 extra points there, because as we all know, Catholicism is delightful. Moving on to the last final second, Jenny and Ben. Daniel?
I didn't hear any real words.
And let's move on to the panel! At the end of that exhausting round, on 13 delightful points was Ben and Jenny. So yeah, nice. But on 14 delightful things was Tim and Daniel. Yes. And so now it's over to the Boffins for a score update. Boffins!
Thank you very much, David. According to the Grain of Truth Sim City game, Daniel Pengelly is in the lead by Godzilla and the population bursting into flames!
Substantial lead.
It is indeed. It's now time to reveal our answer to the Grain of Truth Connection Challenge. Firstly, did anyone on the panel get the connection between your topics? That was video games, Shakespeare, literature, and farming.
Is it the board game Carcassonne?
Okay, explain
why. It's based off the settlement, because I know your clue was something to do with France, I believe.
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure the game Carcassonne is based on the settlement of the region of Carcassonne in France. It's a game, so there's the games part of it, and there's also various bits of agricultural stuff involved with it, so that's, hence the farming. And then I forgot to add literature and Shakespeare. So there you go. It's 2 out of 4, and that's
they've
all
got, they've got a rule book. That's literature, right?
That's literature, and was it roughly the same era as Shakespeare? There we go.
Any other thoughts on the panel?
Is it some sort of contemporary adaptation of Shakespeare using video games? Henry V.
I was actually thinking myself going back towards Joan of Arc, who was, of course, a simple farm girl in France, featuring in Henry VI, Part 1 of Shakespeare's, and a topic of great literature. And perhaps a new video game has been born where you choose whether or not to burn her at the stake through the entire court case. Yes.
I thought it was the recent film Julie and Julia. Sort of a person imitates Julia Child's, sort of almost like some sort of video game role play, who sort of learnt to cook in France and sort of used food from the farms, but wrote about it beautifully.
There we go.
Oh, nice.
Well, I have to say the closest to the answer was, in fact, Jenny Lovell, but all those answers, maybe a round of applause for the panel. The connection I have, which is probably not as good, but nonetheless, I think that we should learn something anyway. There's a fellow by the name of Charles Perrault, P-E-R-R-A-U-L-T, so apologies if I pronounced that incorrectly, but he was born in France, and he's famous for his fairy tale literature. In particular, he wrote Cinderella and Puss in Boots, and some of his stories appear about ballet, which appear in a collection called Magic Slippers, which includes extracts from Romeo and Juliet by William Shakespeare. One of his other stories, Little Red Riding Hood, would later be adapted as a video game in 2009 by Tale of Tales company called The Path. In his last years, Perrault also took up literary art of writing epic poetry for children to show his genuine devotion to Christianity. And one of his tomes, which is History's Où qu'on du temps passe, has been translated into English as The Tales of Mother Goose. And a goose is an animal you might find on a farm. There we go.
Bravo.
Yeah. So there we are. But now it's over to the Boffins to declare who has won the ripped abs. So over to the Boffins.
Thank you very much, David. According to the Grain of Truth Airlines, our winner today is Tim Redmond. Who was finally put in the lead by missing luggage but still getting the window seat.
Oh, how delightful. What are you going to do with your ripped abs?
I'm going to break off them.
Fabulous idea. That's the end of the program, and I hope you enjoyed it. You can come and see the recording on the first Saturday of the month at WPO at the Wesleyan. Our website is www.grainoftruth.com.au, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/grainoftruthshow, and on Twitter at grainoftruths. And that leaves me to thank our panel, Ben Timms, Jenny Lovell, Tim Raymond, Daniel Pengelly, our Boffin of the Week, Jan Franklin, our composer, Matthew Hadcraft, our logo designer, Tom Markovich, our sound restorer, Armin Petit, properties manager, set dresser, and official palm better, Asha Cameron. I've been your host, David, and just have an absolutely splendid day!
This has been a Carrot Is Not Good For You production.